It is time for Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice. Traditional small animal medicine and surgery, chiropractic, laser therapy, acupuncture, and Chinese herbal medicine. 518-789-3440. MillertonVet.com. With us this day, this wonderful, fine, fine day, Dr. Carolyn Cannon, owner and chief veterinarian at the Millerton Veterinary Practice. I did it. Dr. Cannon.
You did a great job.
Thank you.
Introducing.
Good. Well, that's the show, really. You can go now.
Okay. I have to answer questions. I'm programmed.
Okay.
Have you got some questions for me today?
No.
Okay.
Okay.
Too much rain.
Exactly. And that they melted like the Wicked Witch of the West. All right. Kelly from Kent, Connecticut, with Jerry, the 4-year-old Basset Hound mix. I've heard about the flu that's going around, and I'm worried about Jerry getting exposed. I wonder if I should be getting the influenza vaccination for him. He is a young dog with no health issues. We live in the city during the week and in Kent on the weekends.
Jerry is a perfect name for a Basset Hound.
Don't you think?
Yeah, it's a Basset Hound-looking dog. So that is a timely question. Everyone's talking and worried about influenza. It is transmissible quite fairly easily between dogs through contact and through aerosol, just like it is with people.
So sniffage?
And the dogs can spread it before they have any symptoms. So that's somewhat worrisome, of course. And the fact that dogs travel so easily on the East Coast and sometimes farther than that on a regular basis. So the decision to do the influenza vaccine is certainly a very individual one. And it depends on the exposure that your dog is likely to have to other dogs who are not in a controlled environment. So in New York, there was an outbreak of influenza.
In Brooklyn,
In Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, in Brooklyn. So so it was in the city. We, you know, there have been, to where we live here, there have been cases as close as Danbury, I believe, and Stamford, but I don't know that I would call it an outbreak. So we haven't had many, many dogs come down with influenza. So you have to ask yourself, you know, what is my dog's exposure? If I have a 8-pound chihuahua that only comes down in my brownstone and goes into the backyard and then doesn't go on the sidewalk and doesn't sniff nose with other dogs, probably not. But if you've got a dog who's in the city and on the sidewalks and greeting everyone and other dogs, especially, or goes to a dog park, you don't know these dogs and where they've been, then there is, I would guess, significant risk of exposure to influenza. If you have a healthy dog, most healthy dogs, just like healthy people, can overcome influenza, but they get pretty darn sick and sometimes need hospitalization.
What are the what does dog flu look like? How do you know that you're...
Mostly it's respiratory disease. They can also have gastrointestinal symptoms like people can, but they mostly have respiratory disease. So they start with a cough and oftentimes also have a fever.
And do they start looking a little peaked? Do they look a little like hangdog? No, no pun.
Yes, they don't feel well.
Okay, so that's not so you're not walking. I'm just trying to.
You're not walking around with it, right? But the day or a day and a half or 2 days before, they look absolutely fine, and they aren't coughing, but they are contagious. They're shedding virus.
Right. Okay. So also, So Jerry, since we don't know where Jerry lives in the city, and since Brooklyn, it's so funny because if you say Brooklyn, it sounds so small, relatively speaking,
right,
or so big. You know, like Brooklyn to Central Park and 77th and Central Park West is.
Right. So if there hasn't been, you know, if you're living in Manhattan and you haven't seen or heard of any influenza, you know, some people are choosing not to vaccinate. I certainly, if there is an outbreak of influenza and you start to hear about it, then getting the vaccine is not only good for your own dog, but good for the bigger picture, so that you're not spreading
it.
The influenza all over the place.
So I guess...
especially if you're traveling up to Kent.
So I guess
so. Those
I
are
would
the
say.
Kinds of things that you need to think about as far as vaccination goes. I can say that reactions, so immediate reaction to the vaccine, has been in my hands minimal. In my practice, we try to vaccinate as little as possible.
Right.
Because of the potential side effects of vaccines or the potential effect on the body. So
I think what
I have to always have that individual, just as care in general for health, for disease, excuse me, should be individualized, care and for the health of your pet should be an individual decision based on what amount of risk are you willing to take, how healthy is your dog, and what is their potential exposure.
So I guess what I would say
right?
to
but
Kelly...
Of course, your potential to get in a car accident traveling with your dog has a certain percentage, and we do it every day because we have to do it. So, you know, you have to keep all those things in mind, risk versus the benefit of getting the vaccination.
Kelly should talk to the vet, basically, because there are three questions that you raised that are totally valid, which is how much exposure is Jerry having? And, you know, and it's an individual... The point about it being an individual decision is relevant. So,
yes, thank you.
In the end, it sort of defaults to, hey, talk to your vet about your situation so that you can make an informed decision about the vet's client, basically, and your dog.
And that's true for any vaccine.
Pretty much, yeah. And no, but I just going way back, there was such a plethora of vaccine. It's like it was such an automatic that, you know, you don't want that. By the same token, you don't want your dog running to the dog park, sniffing noses, etc., with other people that you don't, other dogs and stuff that you don't know, and then coming up and just meeting up with other dogs.
Right. I think you need to take
it's a balancing act.
Yeah, precautions that make sense.
Right, and one last quick question about that. If you have a household full of dogs, does that change your calculus?
Again, it depends on if you have a household full of dogs. Those dogs, most people don't end up taking those dogs places because they have their own playmates right there at
right.
home. And
okay.
So, yeah, it may not be as
right.
as important.
Makes perfect sense.
It's the lone dog that goes to daycare every
right.
day. You know, and your daycare is getting people from all over the place that you have to stop and say, okay, you know, what is my potential? If your dog goes 5 days a week to daycare, what's their potential for getting exposure to influenza, and do you want to take that risk?
Quick question about daycare, isn't it required? Is it not required?
Most places it is, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I would just think that once you're aggregating random, I don't mean this in any unfriendly way, but once you are aggregating dogs from different places that all have, I mean, it would almost have to be this is a requirement.
Yes.
All right. Jan from Amenia, New York, with a 9-year-old Newfoundland, Fundy. Now, is that a good, these are very, Fundy has developed terrible arthritis. He was put on a medication, an NSAID, which made him sick and affected his liver, so we took him off. I'm considering other therapies. Do you know of any other natural arthritis therapies that would be effective?
So first of all, I'll say an NSAID is a non-steroidal. It's a not means
it's like
stands for a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug.
Like Advil.
Like Advil, but in dogs, like carprofen and meloxicam.
Right, which used to be Rimadyl. Did anything used to be Rimadyl?
Yes. So carprofen was Rimadyl. Carprofen is a generic name for Rimadyl. Meloxicam is a generic name for Medicam. So those are very common medications that are given for either acute pain and inflammation or chronic. And so the problem with them is that they can affect, with any non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug, it can affect liver and the gastrointestinal tract adversely, potentially. Doesn't in all dogs. So, yes, there are many, many therapies, other alternative therapies for arthritis and simple things that can be done early on. So when you have, you know, the conversation with your veterinarian early on about my dog is a little stiff now when he gets up, maybe at 5 or 6 years old, that's the time to start addressing it. And I thought I would just throw that out there. Because if you can do some intervention early on, you have a dog who has a longer life without those non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. So I think everyone knows about the joint supplements that, you know, have glucosamine, low molecular weight chondroitin sulfate, There's Dasiquin, which is what I use because it has the most research science behind it. I use avocado. It's ASU. It's avocado / soybean unsaponifiables. It's another anti-inflammatory, natural anti-inflammatory. And then there's curcumin, which is from turmeric, which also has anti-inflammatory properties, and a number of other natural anti-inflammatories.
So here's the interruption and quick question around that. Obviously, there are adverts for different things, you know, because, like, this is super glucose. This is, you know, these names get thrown around.
Yeah.
And I don't know that that's particularly helpful because...
No, it's not at all.
Right. So...
That's not at all. Glucosamine should absorb. So glucosamine... hydrochloride should absorb well into your dog's gut. So that's really the thing, is whether it's changed so that it absorbs better. Chondroitin sulfate doesn't absorb well in dogs, so the low molecular weight is made so that it will absorb better. Because okay. Otherwise you're buying it and you're feeding it, and it's not helping. So that is why you buy a more expensive product. You can get glucosamine at Walmart, and it isn't going to help very much.
And that's because the dog's not going to be able to. It's just relevant because, when these things come out, it's like, aha, okay, my dog's got arthritis, and he's on glucosamine. And that's
right.
Fine, except that it's not actually doing anything.
Yeah.
Or I don't mean it quite like that. It's not being absorbed properly, and therefore it's not having the full effect. And
exactly.
So then you have to go and reset.
And how should these things be combined? In what proportions,
right.
Et cetera. And that's what you're paying for. And you don't have to, you know, people aren't buying it typically. Sometimes they buy it at the vet's, but you can get almost anything online. So veterinarians not making, it's not a windfall kind of thing.
Right.
And it's actually a money-losing thing oftentimes to carry these things. But we carry them because that's what we believe in, and that's what the science is behind.
Right.
We don't have science behind what you're picking up at Walmart, and so who knows whether it's working. And the same idea with the omega-3 fatty acids. Again, in high doses, you need to give the correct dose in order to make it anti-inflammatory for the joints, and so you need help with that. And if you're getting fish oil, from a cheap place that's been sitting on the shelf, you could potentially be giving something that has a high amount of heavy metals, which wouldn't be good at all, given on a daily basis.
Right, this is my least favorite word on the planet because it's now being overused in every field, which I just cannot bear. But the word is curate, and the reason that you have a professional in a field is because they know which glucosamine. It's like, which product do I give my dog for arthritis? This isn't a DIY project, simply because most people don't know what it is that they're looking for. What it is that they're looking for.
Right. And they go on, and so oftentimes we find that people go on Chewy and get whatever Chewy says is.
Yeah, I know.
Chewy.com is that now the
and
new veterinarian.
Chewy's got this adorable. I just had a Chewy fight with somebody, and this is me. They've got adorable ads, and this is again. Unfortunately, over the last 20 years or so, people have had their discernment features sort of just mushed. All the different colors on the palette have been made into one beautiful brown. So it's like, okay, that's a cute dog, and it says every product, so I can get it for cheap. And the essence here is...
Well, and they know how to market to
sure.
people, right? They know exactly how to market to you, and they actually put something on that's less expensive than they're paying for it to attract you.
Which is called a loss leader in
stuff.
Any retailing, but that's
and that's fine as long as you're aware of what's happening to you.
But basically, you need to know that. But the upshot is, you need to know what product to order from Chewy.com.
Yeah, yes,
and that
yeah.
is where I, you know, once again, this sounds like a okay. You know, thanks for the questions. Just call the vet. But so
well, I'm trying to be a little bit more helpful than that. But yeah, so. I mean, the dose of omega-3s, as long as you have one that is, in my estimation, that the company can tell you that they measure the heavy metals and that they have very small amounts, parts per million of heavy metals, and that you get a product that's fresh off the shelf, so it hasn't been oxidized.
How do you know that?
You're actually giving a bad thing.
How do you know that you're not that your product?
Well, you want to get it from a place that has big that has good turnover, but you also, if you're not familiar with the company, you know, you call them and say, you know, are you checking this product for heavy metals? And the most of the if you go online and get something, you're going to pay more for something that is controlled in that way. And so they usually will tell you if what they're doing as far as monitoring of these supplements. But there are no, you have to keep in mind that there are no laws for supplements except for what they can claim on the label.
Right.
So nobody's regulating what goes into them.
Gotcha.
In a close way. So, but the rest of the question would be addressed as far as arthritis in general. Laser therapy, great idea for arthritis if it's local to certain joints. Acupuncture, chiropractic, canine rehabilitation therapy, all those things are absolutely wonderful for and can take the place of nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. Just for pain, there are other medications that won't tend to bother the liver and the stomach, like such as gabapentin. But that would have to be a conversation with the veterinarian. But lots and lots of things that can be done. Moving those joints is so important, and so you need to find a way to get those joints moving.
Okay. Tom from Millerton with a 9-month-old Shiba Inu Yuki. Yuki is never good on the Shiba Inu pronunciation, but they're so cute. Yuki is scheduled to be spayed in a couple of weeks. I remember after having my previous dog spayed, she had to wear a dreadful collar that stressed her out, and she seemed to take out everything in her path. Does she really have to wear it? I am with her all day because she goes to work with me.
Every dog who is spayed, in my opinion, needs to have protection so that they won't lick and chew at their incision. And always the dreadful collar is sometimes, in fact, the biggest decision that people have to make it to have surgery on their dog, to have a growth removed, is the fact that they have to wear the collar. Believe it or not, they simply cannot come to terms with the dog wearing the collar. I'm certain that the collar bothers people more than it bothers the dogs. But there are lots of alternatives. So many people are going to something called a Sergi Snuggly, which is a little bodysuit that fits over their entire body that will cover that incision and prevent them from licking at it. So that's a great answer as an alternative to the cone. If you have a cone that's fitting well, the dog can actually eat with the cone. They can sleep with the cone on.
I think people have had too much experience. This is a civilian thing with the hard cones with their dogs bashing into doors.
Yes, and I have to say that some dogs are so are so incredibly to that incision that they will that they sometimes have to wear a hard cone. But the Sergi Snuggly is helpful.
Okay, that's a cool thing.
Yeah, and then for those kinds of surgery, and then if there are gashes or, you know, growths that are farther toward the front, then you have the option of the inflatable cone, and there's that bite knot collar, which is very stiff. It looks like a neck brace. So there are other options.
People are definitely inventing solutions. All right, Sarah from Sheffield with a 5-year-old cat with Muse. Muse has been put on a prescription diet for food allergies. She's on venison, which is very costly. I was in the pet food store the other day and saw they now have a venison diet, which is half the price, and I'm considering giving it a try. Would you recommend the switch? I think we covered this with Jan, but go ahead.
It's this is a bit of a complex matter because the food allergy thing can go a couple of ways. You're trying to find, with putting a dog on venison or rabbit, you're looking for a novel protein, so a protein that their gastrointestinal tract has likely not been exposed to before, because food allergies usually involve the larger proteins in food. So a novel protein, venison, rabbit, those are becoming less and less novel these days.
I would think.
So because they can often be added to other foods. So, but if truly your dog has never eaten that, it's not a bad idea to try that. You can also try a hydrolyzed protein diet instead, but that's another story. So if you are going to try, though, a venison diet, if you're going to try a food elimination diet, then it's imperative that you try a limited ingredients diet. So it's not just the fact that you're feeding venison as meat, but you have to have, number one, that the food sourced correctly so that you're getting a good source of venison. You're not getting it from China or something like that, and that you have limited other ingredients so that you don't have a huge amount of things in it. And that is not easy to do and balance a food, and that's why these foods are more expensive. They're prescription diets, and they are more expensive. So getting one off the shelf, you're not doing the same thing. Simple as that.
Yep. And
that's why it's so inexpensive.
Yeah, and that's just the bottom line. I think we've got time for one more question. Yes, we do. Dan from Salisbury, Connecticut, with Comet, the three-year-old Aussie. I noticed that the ticks were bad this past spring, and I used a tick prevention faithfully, but Comet still contracted Lyme disease. I heard there's a Lyme vaccine for animals. How effective is the vaccine, and is it worth it for me to vaccinate Comet this fall? We are avid hikers, so our tick exposure is increased because we're in the woods a lot.
That's a great question. I have to say that since we've used this non-adjuvanted vaccine, it produces an antibody to the OspA, which is on the a surface protein on the Borrelia burgdorferi organism, the spirochete that causes Lyme borreliosis or an infection with Lyme disease. Since we've been using this vaccine and trying to use it on young dogs, it seems to be quite effective. I rarely see a dog who's been well vaccinated and kept up with the vaccine who comes down with Lyme disease. The studies show that it's probably about somewhere between 92 and 98% effective, which is darn good for a vaccine. There was a big study done with a very large practice in Maine with about 6,000 dogs, and they found that the dogs who were, half the dogs who were vaccinated and the other group that was not, either not fully vaccinated, so they came in and they forgot their second shot or they never came back, et cetera, plus the dogs who were not vaccinated, and they had a 23%, between 21 and 23% chance, 23% of them actually came down with Lyme disease, came positive with Lyme. That's a huge amount, percentage of animals, and it's because it's endemic in our area. So that being said, does that mean then it will be as effective if your dog already has the Borrelia in them because they've been positive once? And that I can't say, but potentially it would be. So I think
it's going to make Dan feel better.
Pardon?
It's going to make Dan feel better.
Well, if your dog is seronegative, so you want to test them first and either have them come back negative on the screening test or have a very low antibody titer and then go ahead and vaccinate.
Okay.
It's going to be worth it for a dog who has incredible exposure, which is in the woods in this part of the world.
All right, Dr. Cannon, you have done brilliantly. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Pet Files, Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com.